Welcome. Before you begin this guide tour, it is important that you follow these instructions. Once you are connected, let the recording play until it reaches the end. I recommend that you switch off your mobile phone or turn down the volume so that you don't get distracted. Even if you run into someone you know, or you will lose track of the story. You will at all times receive instructions to find your way around. The walk lasts 45 minutes at a leisurely pace and ends at Virgen do Camino Street. We are going to take a trip down memory lane by visiting Ribadeo's Indiano architecture from the end of the 19th century and beginning of the 20th century. Indiano was the name given to Spaniards who made good in the Americas and then returned to Spain. A person from Ribadeo, a character inspired by Ramón Fernández Higueras, the son of Indianos, Galicians who emigrated to the Americas and returned wealthy, and he himself, an immigrant in Argentina, will be your guide on this tour, enabling you to relive scenes from the lives of the Indianos of Ribadeo. But first, let's position ourselves. You are outside the tourist office. Now, stand with your back to it, next to the palm tree, and you will see the gardens of Praza do Campo. Slightly to the left, you will see a zebra crossing. Cross it and then keep walking straight through the gardens to the bus stop ahead. When you get there, stop for a moment. This is where our tour begins. It will be narrated by a voice that could very well belong to a real Indiano, acting as the imaginary guide for this itinerary.
Early days of 1936, an awful stench from Stato Beach in the parish of Devesa, bordering Rinlo, invaded the whole of Ribadeo, where 3 days earlier a dead 15-meter-long sperm whale had washed up on the shore. After extracting nearly 2,000 liters of the precious spermaceti from its head cavity and futilely searching for the ambergris from the whale's intestines, that huge mass of fat was left to rot in the sun, attracting flocks of seagulls all the way from island. Lying on my bed, I also felt like a beached whale in the family house, surviving almost exclusively on books from my father's library. That morning, my breakfast was L'Emigración en Galicia by Ramón Castro López, published in 1923. Until then, I accepted the nickname of Indiano with pride, convinced that Indianos were genuine agents for innovation and the driving force behind local progress. But that book was a reality check, and I realized that Indianos were also regarded with suspicion by the traditional oligarchies. This is how they are described in the book. With what they earn in the Americas, many of these Havanans buy a snobbish and elegant suit that turns them into a walking carnival. And in disguise, plump and swanky, they return to their towns to give lectures and act like sirs, embarking on a cruel campaign against priests and religions, customs, good habits, and the revered traditions of towns. But the fact is that in Ribadeo, Indianos, in addition to bringing with them new ideas, fashions, or eating habits, co-finance the water supply for drinking water, the fresh produce market, the cemetery, and a number of schools. And their contributions made it possible to fit out urban spaces like this garden. Precisely here, in 1957, this bronze bust was placed, a gift from the government of Uruguay to Ribadeo to honor José María Alonso y Trelles, known as Viejo Pancho, who emigrated in 1875 and ended up becoming the most popular voice of Gaucho poetry. Although he can't be considered Indiano in the strict sense, from that moment onward, in Ribadeo he became the symbol of our emigration to the Americas, a mixture of European Gaucho colonists from the Pampa and seafarer from Portillan. But the most visible legacy left by the Indianos was their houses. The most spectacular of all the ones built in Galicia is the house known as Casa Torre dos Moreno. It is the tallest one in the quarter called the Cantón. It is the one that has the round turret crowned with a red dome that shines from the salt residue that is left when the tide rises and the wind blows towards the interior. The same wind that brought the stench of sperm whale to this square on that January morning.
With his gentlemanly appearance, the Indiano continues walking around the garden, looking for the most unique and recognizable building in the town, which is slightly further down to the right. Can you see it? Good. Now let's get closer so that we can calmly observe its facade from the wall that separates the Canton's garden, which is that small promenade that runs parallel to the building's arcade.
This house's construction was promoted by the brothers Pedro and Juan Moreno Ulloa, who emigrated during the second half of the 19th century to Argentina, where they became rich through large farming and livestock enterprises in the Pampa of Buenos Aires. They never returned to Ribadeo during their lifetime, but the fact that they kept up a constant relationship through investments in their town of birth makes us think of a special case of Indianos who remained abroad. In fact, they didn't build this house to live in it. It was actually conceived as a rental house. At the beginning of the 20th century, in this plot there still stood the remains of the ancient fortress, stronghold consisting of towers, walls, patios and moats, of which all that are left is Torre Julia. It was in 1911 when they commissioned the project for the new construction over the remains of the fortress to a young Argentinian architect, son of Spanish emigrants, who lived in Buenos Aires, like the brothers. His name was Julián García Núñez.
Y bien, Julián, al margen de que estemos encantados con tu visita,
gracias.
Supongo que vienes para informarnos de los avances de la
casa. So, Julián, besides the fact that we are delighted by your visit, I suppose you have come to tell us the latest news on the progress of the house. Yes and no, Mr. Pedro. What do you mean? Is something wrong? Don't be alarmed, Mr. Juan. I'm here to tell you about the construction of your house over in Ribadeo. But unfortunately, I can't provide much news on the progress. Explain. You are fully aware that since I accepted the commission for the development of the stately house in the site of Plaza del Campo, it was always my intention to respect the remains of the ancient fortress, the Julia Tower. What are you trying to say, Julián? That the delicate structure of the ancient tower did not bear the foundation works and it collapsed? Really? Was anyone wounded? No, Mr. Pedro. There were no human losses, only material ones. But how did it happen? Were there necessary measures to prevent it not taken? You can be sure that they were, but unfortunately we discovered too late that the land is not quite suitable for building. An ancient stream ran underneath it. Yes, the Pipelo. That's the one. It was a determined factor that contributed to the collapse. I don't want to seem rude or discourteous, but have you bought a solution or just problems? Juan, please. No, it's okay, Mr. Pedro. Mr. Juan is right. I would not be a very good architect if I were only visiting you to give you bad news and not suggest how to solve the problem, if I may. Look, this is my option. Yes, very nice, but we're farmers. Don't worry, it's easy to see. I had to decide how to replace the ancient tower without altering the initial building project too much. It looks to me that the ancient tower is still there on the drawing. I'm glad to hear you say that, because that was precisely my intention, to preserve the original nature of the project. What you see on the drawings is actually a small landscape, courtyard, and a belvedere that rests on a cylindrical structure, acting as a uniting element with the rear facade. Wait, is all of that really there? Not yet, but it will be. Are you sure there won't be any more problems? I wish I could be sure of that, but the workers lack experience in the use of concrete. So why were they hired? You could have hired other more experienced ones.
It's not that easy.
Bear in mind that there's only one building in all of Galicia made with concrete. Your house is the second one. Say no more. Will we ever see the house finished?
Oh,
of that I can assure you even less. The house will be finished, if that's your question. But if we'll ever get to see it, only God has the answer to that.
The works were completed in 1915, and since then it has been an icon that defines Ribadeo's urban silhouette. But let's not get distracted, for our imaginary host is moving on. Let's follow him. We don't want to leave him talking to himself. You have to cross the canton towards the Torre dos Moreno and continue bordering the entire house to its rear facade. Go down Rua da Fortaleza. It's that street that goes down on the right between the Casa dos Moreno and the town council building, which since 1940 has occupied this neoclassical stately house built by Antonio Raimundo Ibáñez. At the first crossing you find, turn left towards Plaza da Baixo.
As you can see, the building's state of preservation is quite poor. The Moreno brothers died and left no children, and the property was divided among several heirs residing in Argentina, who over time forgot all about its maintenance. I know that during recent years many efforts were made to save the building from wreck, but they were not enough. We can't let it fall. It's an absolutely amazing building. And I'm not saying this because it is the most representative building in Ribadeo, but because it's also an example of the innovative efforts made by the Indianos. Each story has two main floors that face the canton. Each has seven rooms and other smaller ones that face the back. Well, when it was inaugurated in 1915, they each had bathrooms with running water, electricity and heating. Also, the building even had a lift and a rubbish collection system through interior ducts. It infuriates me to see it so deteriorated.
Keep walking along the left-hand sidewalk until you reach the rear facade of Casa dos Moreno. Look at the darkened shop windows, like the Indiano does, as he searches for something from the past that he will not be able to find.
Here, there used to be a casino and a local library. There were bank offices and even a funeral parlor.
Now turn back and head towards the stairs that are slightly to the left, next to a palm tree. Let's stop there. We are at Plaza da Baixo, which was the heart of citizens' coexistence until the 19th century. From here, the Indiano looks with nostalgia at the facade of the old Colón cinema. Can you see it? It's the one that has the round window in the center and is crossed by geometric lines. The cinema opened in 1949 and is a work by Alfredo Vila, the main exponent of rationalist architecture in Lugo.
To me, the Colón cinema is special because it was inaugurated just before I returned to Argentina. It was at the end of August and the film screen was Gentleman's Agreement, one of Ilya Kazan's first films, which strangely enough spoke against the anti-Semitism practiced by Franco's dictatorship. Before the cinema, the site was occupied by a building known as Palacio Florentino. The ground floor on the left-hand side housed the Café do Seno, a place for social gatherings in the 20s with a barbershop next door. But what I have come to see is slightly to the left, sticking out above the rooftops. It is a type of glass observatory that here we call Gurugu. Originally, these observatories were built in the houses of the township owners and were used to control the entrance and exit of their vessels. Having lost their original purpose, they became a sign of architectural extravagance in the Indiano houses. They were fixed in my mind as I traveled around the world. For me, the Gurugu has to do with the need of emigrants to recover the landscape of their childhood. When I would climb to the top of the house and spend hours watching as the estuary came in after wandering through a land that knows no boundaries.
The Indiano starts to walk. as if you were following in his footsteps, go down the stairs in front of you, and then cross to that wider sidewalk that is protected with iron balls. When you get there, turn left. At the bottom of the square, you should be able to see a salmon-colored building with a central gallery that gets wider as its height increases. Walk towards it.
There is the house of Clemente, an emigrant who, when he returned to Ribadeo during the early years of the 20th century, decided to buy those two annex buildings to redesign them as a single house, which was not a circumstance that commonly took place in the architecture promoted by the Indianos. For many years, the Casariego Pharmacy operated in the ground floor of this house. It was a place of busy social gatherings, run by Manuel Alonso Casariego, and later by Wentes, who played left wing for the football club Ribadeo FC. I remember he used to keep one of those footballs with the seams on the outside in the back room.
Before crossing Amando Pérez Street, which is the one that goes all the way down to the port of Portillán, the Indiano stops for a moment and looks down, as if he can sense that at the bottom stood the bridge of Ponte dos Santos, which connects Galicia and Asturias since 1987.
On this street, which was given the names of Grande, Mayor and Apad, a little further down stood the house, known as Casa de Baixo, which belonged to a ship owner and was founded in 1839 by the Basque seafarer Francisco Antonio Bengoechea. His rival was the banker Antonio Casas, who owned Casa de Riba, located in Pazo de Sargadelos on Praza do Campo.
Now continue along that narrow street with bollards, called Ingeniero Schultz, and when you get to the end, turn left onto Viejo Pancho Street and walk up it.
Ribadeo's ship owners sailed their vessels to the Baltic Sea, to the Americas, South Africa and the Philippines, which shows the importance of our town in maritime trade during the 19th century, with vessels that in 1858 registered the same number of tons as the ports of Vigo and A Coruña together. But none of the heirs of these ship owners switched to vapor and instead turned their businesses towards banking. Many houses are still full of memories from previous ages, such as exotic porcelain, fine furniture, antique portraits of family members, romantic fans, and display cases with shells.
If you are now on Viejo Pancho Street, keep going until you reach number one, which is on the corner with Travesía Fernández Miranda. There stands the house where José María Alonso y Treyes, known as Viejo Pancho, was born. Its facade bears a commemorative plaque. Today, it houses the Center for Ibero-American Studies.
Viejo Pancho is Ribadeo's most important poet, but he was better known and esteemed in Uruguay and Argentina. He became very popular there by portraying the life and language of the gauchos, with an extensive collection of poems that account for a lifestyle that was coming to an end. Such was the popularity of his book, Paja Brava, during the early decades of the 20th century, that Carlos Gardel sang some of his poems to the music composed by Américo Chirif, such as Insomnio, Opa Opa Opa, Como Todas, or Misterio, which I have so often listened to on the gramophone of my parents' house.
From a window that has just opened, the voice of Carlos Gardel can be heard singing one of the poems by Viejo Pancho. The Indiano then looks back one last time before leaving Ribadeo's old quarter and continues climbing towards the junction of Reinante, Villafranca do Bierzo, and Jesús Rodríguez Murias streets. The latter one is pedestrian. Follow in his steps.
Muchas que son largas las noches de invierno. A través del turbio cristal del recuerdo van mis años mozos pasando muy lento.
When you get the crossing, turn right along Rodríguez Murias Street and then go straight along San Roque Street. This spot, popularly known as Cuatro Calles, is the town's commercial hub and no doubt amasses many of the most representative buildings, not only of Indiano architecture, but also of its rise and expansion.
Every inhabitant of Rivadeo has to pass at least once a day through here in order not to lose their status and be seen. The name of this street commemorates one of the town's most influential Indianos, Jesús Rodríguez Murias, who owned a house here, and when he died in 1909, left an important legacy to the town council. He had emigrated to Cuba at an early age and made a fortune in the tobacco business. This was a very common occupation for the younger immigrants during the second half of the 19th century, for Havana was crowded with chinchales, or small artisan tobacco workshops. Imagine a 15 or 16-year-old youth who'd never left his hometown. One day, his father tells him that he has sold some farmlands or has borrowed money from a moneylender to pay for a ticket to Cuba, and that some fellow townsmen who were now living there will receive him, and that he has to leave in a couple of weeks. The boy is seen coming out of the offices that the agency North German Lloyd had on this street during the 20s to take the bus that stops at Bamonde and take him to A Coruña. There, at the city's port, he embarks on a journey that could last between 13 and 18 days, depending on the conditions at sea. Upon landing at the port of Havana from the boats, the passengers are called by their name to go through Triscornia, a quarantine camp and immigration control where the living conditions were truly harsh and from where only those who were collected by family members or acquaintances could leave. Probably 2 or 3 years later, that same boy will be waiting at the gate of Triscornia to collect his newly arrived younger brother.
By now, you should be arriving at the beginning of San Roque Street, where the theater building still stands. Can you see it? It is the old-fashioned blue building on the right. Our Indiano guide sits on one of the benches in front of it. You can do likewise or stay standing while you listen to his account.
The theatre building has a history because it stands in the site previously occupied by the Royal Tapestry Factory commissioned by Charles III in 1774. The earliest record of the theatre dates from the 19th century. In 1835, the Philanthropic Drama Society was created. It was the owner of the theatre and promoted a reform project that was delayed for several years before the building took on the appearance we see today. I remember it had a painting by the romantic painter Dioniso Fierros, an Asturian who married in Rivadeo. It was beautiful and portrayed the mouth of the Sturdy. Because of its poor condition, it was removed in 1930s. The theater's floor sloped, but it had mechanisms to level it with the stage on dancing days, which was one of its most customary uses. Here, Rivadeo's first cinema screenings were held. In February 1936, with the stench of a sperm whale still pervading the beach of Esteiro, the theatre finally opened, reconverted into a cinema. The seats were still not very comfortable, for they were made of wood, but it was better than the gallery, which had a continuous bench. Fortunately, it continued to host shows. This was where Antonio Machin used to perform, who, by the way, was also the son of an emigrant from Lugo.
Qué calentito y rico está, ya no se puede pedir más.
Miércoles 19 de octubre, en función.
Wednesday, 19 October, with shows at 7:30 in the evening and 10:30 at night, performing in the Grand Verity Show at the Ribadeo Theater. The famous singer of modern songs, Antonio Machin, and his famous orchestra, Cha Cha Cha.
Y su famosa orquesta, Cha Cha Cha.
Manicero se va. Caserita, no te acuestes a dormir sin comerte un cucurrucho de maní.
Now the Indiano stands and starts to walk. The pedestrian zone ends after the theater. Continue along the left-hand sidewalk, over there where that small billboard is. Then cross Ramon González Street at the zebra crossing, dedicated to another of the town's Indiano benefactors, and stay on the left-hand sidewalk of San Roque Street.
There were once some hotels that marked an age in Ribadeo, like the Ferrocarrilana or the Lamas, on the other side of the street. The Ferrocarrilana was first an inn and garage, and later a grand hotel. I remember that when I was young, we used to spend the summer in Ribadeo. In August, the American dinners were held at the Ferrocarrilana Hotel, and were attended by many Indianos and other local high society families on summer holiday. My brothers and I organized the decoration and lighting for some of those dinners. In those days, in that area you could also run into Jesús Dacha, also known as Cafu, a fisherman from Devesa who sold octopus from his bicycle almost every day.
The Indiano stops. As if he were seeing Cafu appear, you stop too, while you listen to Cafu.
Cafu!
¿Qué pasó?
¿Dónde vas?
Compra Vegadeo.
Cafu, that's me. Where are you going? To Vegadeo. Wait there. Look both ways. You have to look before you cross. Or we may have to drag you out from under a wheel. Shit, this isn't Madrid. Cars will run over you here, just like in Madrid. So, have you got any octopus? Why wouldn't I? And are you taking it all to Vegadeo? We haven't seen you around here for days. That's because I haven't come for a few days. What for? There isn't any octopus. There haven't been any catches for weeks. It's probably because of the sperm whale beach in Estado. Have you heard? What does a sperm whale have to do with it? Well, how should I know? But since the thing appeared, the octopuses have disappeared. It may be because of the stench. What picky bastards. I thought they only had an eye, not a nose. What? Even without a nose, that stink is unbearable, you know? Nobody can go anywhere near there. Well, from what I hear, a lot of people have been down there recently. Oh, don't even mention it. I'm absolutely fed up with people. There were even bus tours to see the site. Everyone wants to have a look, but then nobody's willing to put their back into it. Put their back into what? To remove it. Remove it how? Barehanded? No, with a machete, like we did with the others. I was the one who had to slice the biggest part. 20 pigs together don't make up even for half of what I had to cut. I cut meat for myself, meat to throw into the sea, meat to bury in the sand and to feed all of Ribadeo. Feed us your octopus. That's enough for us. Feed? I'll sell it to you.
Fora, presentamo, que despois a miraremos de coñecer.
No me tolees a cabeza que levo presa.
Tes presa por marchar ou tes presa por...
Before continuing, locate the chapel of San Roque across the street. In front of it, you should be able to see some sculptures by César Lombera. They represent the figures of the cocos, a pair of giants that had been parading during the festivities of San Roque for 150 years, as well as during the September Patron Saint festivities. Once you have found it, you can keep walking along the same left-hand sidewalk.
I remember that back then, after the giants' parade, children went along to collect coca and cocoa, crying, "Father died, mother died," because to put them away, they had to lay them down and they looked like corpses. So, this is where my neighborhood begins. It is the Indiano Quarter par excellence. Most of the emigrants that returned to Ribadeo at the end of the 19th century built their house in this area, which was the outskirts of the town, surrounded by open countryside.
There are Indiano houses on both sides of Rua San Roque, but you and the Indiano continue walking along this left-hand sidewalk to get the best view of the first houses that stand right behind the chapel of San Roque. Can you see them? They are magnificent and diverse examples of urban Indiano houses. Stop next to the first one and listen to the Indiano's story.
If we compare them to the usual houses of the period, the Indiano houses were much larger, with wide windows and shapes that clash with the sobriety of the popular buildings. This one was built in 1886 by Francisco López García. Here, we know it as Casa de Ayudantía, because for years it housed the Marine Assistance Ship. One example of the innovative character of these houses are the iron balconies on the facade, introduced at the end of the 19th century as structural and ornamental solutions to replace wood. They require high maintenance, which is why there are few of them left. The next house was also built in 1886. Look closely and you will discover two very characteristic elements of Indiano architecture. The portico that shelters the main entrance with cast iron columns and the gurugu on the rooftop. I entered it once and I recall that to access the observatory from inside, you had to climb a remarkable winding iron staircase.
The Indiano walks a short distance and stops again in front of the next house. You should do likewise.
The third house was built in 1888. Unlike the others, which present aesthetic and technical innovations, this one was inspired on traditional Galician architecture, as can be seen from the austerity of the facade. Still, I can clearly remember the ornamental exuberance of the polylobed arch on its main staircase, and the ceilings painted with bright colors and plant motifs. Undoubtedly, the last house is the most spectacular example of urban Indiano architecture. It is known as Casa dos Andes and was built in 1900. The facade boasts magnificent iron balconies crafted with great technical skill with filigrees, floral motifs and other lavishly shaped elements. These solutions reveal that the design of the project was imported because any builder from the Mariña area will know that these iron structures adapt poorly to humid and seaside climates.
Now the Indiano starts walking again along Rua San Roque, keeping his eyes on the passing cars as if he were seeing something quite different going down the middle of the street. Continue along this same sidewalk.
At the beginning of autumn, the reed caravan passed through here. It was an endless string of carts loaded with reeds that the farmers of Pinheira, Vilaselan and Ribadeo used as bedding for their livestock. They collected them from the reed beds of Reme, Porto and Vegadeo and the bottom of the estuary. From there, they were carried in huge barges to the cove of Vilavella. There on the ramp, or even in the marshes, in a community effort, the carts were pulled up from the port by oxen or cows. From the back of the cart, children would pick bunches of reeds to weave whips, using the same technique that farmers used to string garlic and onions.
If you continued walking, you had to cross Villalba Street and pass in front of Casa Rosa, which is not an Indiano house, although it is an example of modernist architecture from the period. Right after that, you will come across other types of Indiano houses, large mansions surrounded by gardens. The first one is Casa da Calzada. It is unmistakable, with a tall palm tree standing next to it. Pay attention to its facade as you listen to the Indiano.
The garden of Casa da Calzada is one of my favorite spots in all of Ribadeo. They say the palm trees from when the Lanza family had the house built, back in 1910. It is very likely that Julián García Núñez also participated in its project's design. like he did for the Torre dos Moreno and other houses in Figueras, across the estuary. The blend of Parisian-style architecture with the evident Viennese modernist school influence on its facade is where the circle closes. The innovations that arrived from the European capitals were received and transformed in the Americas before arriving in Galicia.
After passing Casa da Calzada, the Indiano enters the house next door, as if intending to share with us something that not everyone is aware of. Keep walking just enough until you are in front of the facade and listen to how the story continues.
This house is known as Casa dos Enanos. It was the residence of Antonio Fernández and Alejandra Higueras, who emigrated to Rosario, Argentina, and made their fortune in the textile sector. The house is named after the family moniker. Antonio's father, who worked as a watchmaker in Rivadeo at the end of the 19th century, signed on as a youth in the Numancia frigate. His legs were burned when a boiler exploded. His body continued to grow, but his legs were stunted. He was a different dwarf, like Toulouse-Lautrec. Anyway, this house preserves one of the most unusual Indiano legacies of all. It is a mural on the dining room walls that visually evokes the memory of immigration. It consists of the five panels that narrate the life adventure of Antonio Fernández in the Americas since he emigrated from Rivadeo. I'm going to describe it to you. I enter the dining room and the first panel next to the door portrays a seascape of the coast of Rivadeo. Continuing clockwise, you can see the second panel with a scene that shows Antonio Fernández leaving the seminary of Mondoñedo, with the image of a carriage about to set off in front of the cathedral. Farther to the right, all around the window, the third panel describes the landing of the emigrants at the port of River Plate. The next one shows a portrait of the typical Indiano dressed in a white linen suit, wide-brimmed hat and smoking an Habana cigar, symbolizing the success achieved through emigration. The final panel is a large one with native Indian figures in a landscape that symbolizes the American continent. And below, in a corner, there is a painted scroll with the following inscription. Dedicated to the American adventure of my parents Antonio and Alejandra. Ramón Fernández Figueras, 1946.
Our Indiano guide stays inside contemplating with nostalgia every detail on the mural, stroking his fingers along the rough surface of the painted wall. I don't think he will be coming out again. To end our walk, continue along this street towards that group of palm trees on the right. As you have seen, some of the Indiano houses have survived in perfect conditions, but others were demolished or modified. There are even some facades that were tiled in 1960s, just like the ones we have just passed on the left. Some of the houses we see are exuberant, while others are simpler. But they were all inspired on architectural models that were in fashion in the Americas. Although the houses were built under the direction of Galician professionals, the promoters imposed the criteria and tastes common in Buenos Aires or Havana, and even imported details and ideas from the already legendary city of Paris. A little further down, after passing the chapel of Virgen do Camino and crossing Luz Pozo Garza Street, stands the last Indiano house along this tour, which will come to an end when we reach it. Have you found it? It also has a palm tree and a belvedere projecting above the rooftop. go up to the front door. This is Casa da Sela, one of the oldest of the still existing houses. It was built in 1869. They say it is a replica of the house its owner had in Mexico and has a huge estate planted with species from the Americas and other autochthonous ones. The desire to differentiate the houses from the surroundings, to show their worldliness, could not only be seen in the imported styles in vogue in European capitals, but also in their exuberant gardens, which attempted to reproduce that highly exotic image of the countries that had embraced them as immigrants. Well, our retrospective stroll along Indiano Ribadeo ends here, in this Indiano garden on Rua Virgen do Camino, which is where we are. It is a tribute from the town to all those emigrants, whether they make good and return or not. Thank you for accompanying me. I hope it has been entertaining and interesting walk. You may want to sit for a moment on one of those benches under the arbor. Then, to return the MP3 device, you need to go back to the tourist office. It's very easy to find. Simply go back to the place where we began, next to the Torre dos Moreno. It's just a 10-minute walk. The characters in the audio guide are played in order of appearance by Patricia de Lorenzo, Alfonso Barata, and Rosolino Marinello. Editing and audio post-production by Jacobe Martínez Antelo, and documentation and script by Jesús Ron. Our thanks to Pablo Rodríguez Vivín for his collaboration.